All right, so today we're diving into some pretty intense legal territory. We're talking Gregg v. Georgia, which is the Supreme Court case that essentially brought back the death penalty in the U.S. So, you might be thinking, wait, didn't the court already get rid of that like a few years earlier? And you'd be right to think that.
That's what makes this case so important. Back in 1972, Furman v. Georgia basically put a stop to executions across the whole country. The justices were really worried about how random and unfair death penalty sentencing was.
Okay, so Furman like revealed this huge problem, right?
Huge problem.
Like way too much chance of bias in who ended up on death row. But it didn't completely outlaw capital punishment though, right?
No, it didn't completely outlaw it. What the court in Furman said was the way the death penalty was being done was unconstitutional, not the punishment itself. And that sent states scrambling to try and come up with systems that could actually pass constitutional muster. And so that's where Georgia and a man named Troy Gregg kind of enter the picture.
So Georgia kind of steps up with their new system, this Georgia model, to be the like test
Like a
case.
test
It's
case.
like they're saying, hey, Supreme Court, we think we fixed it. What do you guys think now?
The pressure was immense. It wasn't just about Troy Gregg. He was convicted of armed robbery and murder. This was about setting a precedent for the whole country for how the death penalty could be used without violating the Eighth Amendment.
The cruel and unusual punishment thing. Okay, so let's get down to the specifics. Like, what exactly did Georgia change about its death penalty system? Because it sounds like they had to walk a really fine line between giving juries some flexibility, but also preventing just total chaos in sentencing.
They introduce what's called a bifurcated trial process, meaning there's two separate phases. The first phase just focuses on figuring out guilt or innocence. And then, if the defendant is found guilty, then there's a whole second phase just for sentencing.
I see. So that's different from how things were before Furman.
Before everything was all kind of mixed up. The jury might hear about all sorts of things like the crime, the defendant's background,
All at the same time.
all at once. It was basically a recipe for arbitrary decisions.
Okay, so by separating guilt from sentencing, Georgia was at least trying to create more objectivity.
At least in theory.
Right, in theory at least. But like, how did they guide the jury's decision making in that second phase? They didn't just like throw everything at them and say, good luck, figure it out, did they?
No, definitely not. This is where this idea of aggravating circumstances comes in. Georgia law actually had a specific list of factors that would make a murder eligible for the death penalty. Things like killing a police officer, committing murder during a robbery, or killing multiple victims.
So the prosecution would have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that at least one of these aggravating factors was there in the case.
But it wasn't like a one-way street. The defense could then present what are called mitigating circumstances, which are basically factors that might persuade the jury to choose a life sentence instead of death. So things like the defendant's age, their mental state, or lack of a prior criminal record.
So Georgia was aiming for this balance. Like they wanted to give jurors some kind of framework, but also give them room to consider the unique things about each case. They called this guided discretion. Did the Supreme Court buy it?
They did.
Really?
In a 7-2 decision, they upheld Georgia's new death penalty statute, finding that it addressed the concerns about arbitrariness that came up in Furman. And this basically gave states the green light to bring back capital punishment using similar systems. But let me tell you, this decision didn't really settle the issue. It just opened up a whole new chapter in the death penalty saga.
Oh boy. Okay, well then let's talk about that.
Sure.
So Georgia's model is the new standard for the death penalty nationwide. But you said this was only the start of a new chapter. Like the debate wasn't over, it just kind of shifted, right? What were some of the biggest criticisms of Gregg, even from people who supported the death penalty in general?
You're absolutely right. Gregg didn't just magically fix all the ethical and legal problems with capital punishment. It basically just gave states a framework to work within. Even some of the justices who voted to keep Georgia's law had some doubts. Like Justice Stewart, who wrote the majority opinion, he acknowledged that you can't make death penalty decisions completely objective. There's always going to be some level of human judgment, and that leaves room for potential bias.
So even with all those safeguards,
right,
that guided discretion idea still comes down to people making decisions, which are subjective by nature.
By nature.
That feels like a major flaw.
It is a major flaw.
Did anyone on the court call that out directly?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Justices Brennan and Marshall, they were really strongly against the death penalty.
Okay.
They wrote powerful dissents in Gregg.
Yeah.
They argued that no matter how many procedures you put in place,
okay,
the death penalty is inherently cruel and unusual punishment.
Right.
Justice Marshall especially.
Uh-huh.
He went beyond just the legal arguments.
Okay.
And questioned if it's even moral for the state to take a life.
Wow.
He thought society had moved past the point where the death penalty was acceptable.
So you've got this clash between procedural arguments,
yeah,
and a deeper philosophical debate, yeah, about what the death penalty even is.
Exactly.
It seems like Gregg v. Georgia made that tension super clear.
It did.
What about more practical concerns?
Okay.
Did the court address things like whether the death penalty actually stops crime?
They touched on it, but the majority opinion kind of dodged the issue. Okay.
Basically, they said, it's not the court's job to decide if the death penalty actually deters crime.
Okay.
That's a policy question for legislatures to figure out.
Gotcha.
They said, as long as a state's reasoning about deterrence isn't totally unfounded,
uh-huh,
the court wasn't going to question it.
Okay.
But that didn't stop the debate from happening outside the courtroom.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back to the real world impact. Did this guided discretion actually work?
Yeah.
Did it make the system fairer, less arbitrary, like Georgia wanted?
That's the million-dollar question, right?
Yeah.
And there's no easy answer.
Okay.
There's been tons of research and analysis over the years.
Yeah.
But the results are mixed.
Really?
Some studies show that racial disparities are still there in death penalty sentences.
Wow.
Which suggests that bias is still a factor.
Right.
Other studies say the system is working as intended.
Right.
And that Gregg's framework has done what it was supposed to do and made things less arbitrary.
So it's complicated.
Very complicated. With strong arguments on both sides.
On both sides, yeah.
It sounds like Gregg tried to make things more organized.
Yeah.
But actually just created a whole new set of problems.
Exactly.
Instead of ending the debate.
Yeah.
It just changed what people were arguing about.
That's right.
How did this play out in the years after Gregg?
Right.
Did later cases try to refine or challenge the system it created?
Absolutely. Gregg v. Georgia didn't end the conversation.
Right.
It started a whole new wave of court cases and legal scholarship.
Okay.
People started looking closely at every part of the decision.
Really?
From how aggravating factors were worded,
wow,
to what role appeals courts should play.
Okay.
And the Supreme Court itself had to deal with the legacy of Gregg,
uh-huh,
in later cases about the death penalty.
Okay.
Remember, this was back in 1976.
Right.
Social values change. Legal understanding changes.
Yeah.
And the court had to revisit some of the assumptions that were part of Gregg's framework.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Gregg v. Georgia, this big landmark case, it kind of opens the door to even more questions and challenges.
It does.
It's like this constant back and forth,
yeah,
between trying to regulate this really complex issue,
uh-huh,
and realizing that maybe there are just some things you can't totally control.
You got it.
Right.
It is a fascinating paradox.
Yeah.
Gregg tries to give this structure, this framework,
okay,
to try and make the death penalty less arbitrary.
Right.
But it doesn't really, and maybe can't,
yeah,
get rid of all the big moral and philosophical problems that are just there.
Right. And you mentioned that societal values change, legal interpretations change.
Exactly.
What were some of the big cases that came after Gregg?
Okay.
That forced the court to really grapple with these questions that were still hanging around.
Right.
Cases that put that framework to the test.
Oh, there were some big ones.
Yeah.
Like Adkins v. Virginia in 2002.
Okay.
The court ruled that executing people with intellectual disabilities violates the Eighth Amendment. And that kind of built on Gregg.
How so?
By narrowing down who could even be considered for the death penalty.
Okay.
They recognized that what we consider cruel and unusual punishment changes as society changes.
So even though Gregg was all about consistency,
right,
later cases showed that there were still these massive moral and ethical questions,
yeah,
that the legal system couldn't just ignore.
Exactly.
It wasn't just about procedure anymore.
Right.
It was about who we are as a society.
Yeah.
And what we think is okay when it comes to punishment.
Exactly.
Were there other cases that kind of chipped away at what Gregg established?
Absolutely. Another huge one is Roper v. Simmons in 2005.
Okay.
The court, again, because of changing societal standards, ruled that you can't execute someone who was under 18 when they committed the crime.
Okay.
And this put even more limits on the death penalty.
Yeah.
Because it recognized that young people just aren't as responsible for their actions as adults.
Because their brains aren't fully developed.
And they're more easily influenced by peer pressure.
Exactly. These cases show that Greg created a system.
Right.
But it wasn't the end of the story.
Yeah.
The conversation kept going, and the court had to change its thinking over time.
Okay, so what's the big takeaway here? Oh. For someone who's trying to understand all of this,
right?
It seems like Greg v. Georgia is this landmark decision.
It is.
But in a way, it also shows the limitations of what legal systems can actually do when dealing with such a huge moral issue.
I think you put it perfectly.
Really?
Greg v. Georgia is a key moment in the whole history of the death penalty in America.
Okay.
It tried to clean up a system that was full of inconsistency and unfairness.
Right.
And while it did succeed in setting up a set of rules for states to follow,
okay,
it also kind of accidentally showed how deeply complicated and controversial the death penalty really is.
So it's not a nice, clean ending.
No.
It's more like an invitation to keep wrestling with these fundamental questions.
I like that.
Can we really get rid of bias?
Is guided discretion even possible when human judgment is always going to be a part of it?
Right.
And maybe most importantly is the death penalty, even when it's done fairly, a just punishment.
Exactly. Greg v. Georgia didn't answer these questions.
Okay.
It just gave us a new place to argue about them.
Hmm.
It challenges all of us to really think critically, to look at our own beliefs about justice and punishment,
right,
and to have real conversations about what role, if any, the death penalty should have in society.
That's a great point, Greg v. Georgia. Like so many other important legal cases, it's not just some case in a textbook.
Yeah.
It makes us think more deeply about our values,
right,
about our laws,
exactly,
and about what kind of society we want to live in.
I agree.
Well, thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.
Of course, my pleasure.
Hopefully it's given you some things to think about.
Yeah.
And maybe even spark some good conversations.
I hope so.
That's it for today.
Okay.
See you next time.
See ya.